Hello, everybody, and this is Hunter Goes to the Movies. I'm your host, Hunter Dusing. There's no John or Stuart here. The show is completely racist-free. They're not here. There's nothing here that will offend you. Today, we're going to talk about the latest Criterion Collection releases, see what's coming up in their new slate, discussing such films as Watership Down and David Lynch's Eraserhead. Then we're going to go down the street and see what's playing at the Art House Cinema, the Angelica Theater, and perhaps talk to some of the local art house filmmakers and see what they're doing for the upcoming film festival that no one will attend. All right, let's talk about it.
All corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the I Love Barack Obama podcast. My name is Jorge Dominguez Ruiz Santiago Esperanza. And I want to say this. I love Barack Obama. Today I become a U.S. citizen. Sing a fellow. I love you, Barack Obama. Today I become U.S. citizen. Yes, that's right, folks. Today become U.S. citizen. Open the borders, baby. Come on, Uncle Pedro, how'd you come? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Today I become U.S. citizen because dopey, dopey, dopey Barack let me in the country. You know what this show gonna be called today? I am gonna call this episode Anchor Babies Away. Yes, that's right. Manufactured in Mexico, little Jorge, processed in the U.S. Hey, yeah, mommy, daddy, U.S. citizen. Yay! La cucaracha, la Barack Obama, la Barack Obama. Yay! Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm celebrating Barack Obama's monumentous decision along with my cohorts here. John?
Yep. See?
And Hunter.
Zip, zap, zoomity, bop.
Yeah. See, that's good now for Bill Cosby, because now there's more brown people he can rape.
Okay.
Oh!
Can we just change my name so, like, this can never show up? Like,
All right. We'll change your name to William Russell Cosby, okay?
I'm Bill Cosby for this episode.
Yeah.
Here you go, Juanita! Here's some pills, take them.
Yeah. I'm Bill Cosby!
Hey! That's right, now I can get all the Spanish fly without going to Mexico.
Why don't you pull up your pants?
Seriously, what I don't get is why is it 4 million, he says, or we're giving 4 million illegals or whatever, or immigrants protected status, but I'm like, why does he just say 4 million Mexicans?
John, you know like, what? I'll tell you what. It's not 4 million. That number is heavily fucking decreased.
About 6 or 7. But he doesn't mention any other, like, I mean, it could be Russians here illegally, Saudi Arabians, you know, anything.
Anybody,
so.
Well, in South America and Central America, I mean, they're from all over the place.
In Boston, I mean, I'm sure there's some Irish that are illegal.
Oh, totally. It's probably illegal Australians there as well.
Well, they're the biggest problem. Yeah. Let's face it, you know.
That's right.
But yeah, I saw The Departed. I know
let's not forget the Armenians.
The Armenians.
Yeah, I'm suspicious about all of them.
You got to do something about those Armenians.
That's right.
Yeah, they're terribly offensive, those guys.
Yeah,
well, speaking of Armenians.
They're worse than the Irish back in the day when they came to this country.
That yak porridge sucks.
Yeah. Did you see that butt of Kim Kardashian? That could feed Guadalajara. Yeah, it's that fucking big.
Oh, jeez.
I never want to see Kim Kardashian's butt ever again.
Although I'm sorry, I did see a Photoshop of Cosby with Kardashian. It's like Rape Magazine or something. It was pretty hard. But I laughed, I admit.
Oh, God.
Hey, do you know what Barack Obama's favorite dessert is? Hey, it's brownies! Yay! Hey, the brownies taking over the country! Yay!
What I find amazing is your stereotypes come from absorbing our media.
Yes, they do.
Because it's not like you live here to like pick up on all this stuff. It's like you basically absorb this.
I fucking watch
watching our
Fox
media.
News. I watch Fox News. Hey,
he watches Looney Tunes with Speedy Gonzalez too.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I watched Geraldo before being a fucking idiot on Megyn Kelly, acting like a complete.
Oh God!
I'll tell you one thing. The only person who made any fucking sense after that crush down the walls speech by Obama today, the only person who made any fucking sense was Charles Krauthammer.
When he Krauthammer's the man.
That's because he always makes sense.
He said, "Why didn't Barack Obama do this back in 2009-10?" When he had the power, when he had the balance of power in the Senate.
Right.
And he waits till now, till he's lost it in 2012, to wield extreme executive power.
Yeah.
So, you guys saw the address to the nation, did you?
I didn't see it.
Embarrassing.
I was in Kempo class, just but on the drive over there, I was listening to like a summary on the radio, and they were jeering it and ripping into it, but I didn't hear the actual address.
He was telling some sob story about how some lady got over here and she had spoke no English and all she had with her was her cross and a bag of clothes or some shit, and she couldn't go back to Mexico to attend her father's funeral or something. It was just one sob story after another. It was ridiculous. You know what?
She grew up to be Vanessa Del Rio.
Wasn't she Puerto Rican? I don't know.
I can't remember. I don't know any of that stuff.
She gets automatic entry status. Yeah, I said entry.
And the thing is I think the logic behind it is, you know, oh, we're going to get some votes out of this.
It's going to sabotage that party.
But you know what?
Yeah.
I know this from, you know, a lot of people close to me are working the construction industry. The laborers they hire don't use banks. They don't vote. They don't do any of that stuff.
No, all that shit's just cash in hand, you know, under the counter stuff.
Well, no. They do get checks, but those check cashing trucks come up to the site and they cash their checks right there, and they're perfectly happy to hand over like 10% of it to the check cashing trucks.
Jeez.
They go to those check cashing trucks, the check cashing
place,
and you know in those trucks there's a dude with a shotgun. Just like sitting back there. There's a guy with a rag and soaked in oil and a shotgun sitting back there polishing that thing.
Oh my god!
But they go to the check cashing places. They don't trust banks.
It can be traced. That's why
it's a cultural thing. And you know, because they don't want to leave any footprints, and they send a lot of the money back to Mexico.
Yeah.
And they don't vote because they think it's gonna. You know, they think it's going to come back to them. They don't like to be on the government's radar.
John.
So. Right.
John, say it. Mm-hmm. Say it.
What?
Don't want no paper trail, man.
What?
Don't want no paper trail, man.
Ay, ay, ay. Don't want no paper trail.
it's true. It's very funny because I heard somebody was – my neighbor was complaining that, you know – because of voter ID laws, like minorities can't vote. That's why Wendy Davis lost here in Texas. And I was just kind of shaking my head. But I was just thinking, no, they don't vote, period. And, you know.
Well, you'll notice that opposition likes to believe in the fantasy voter. You know, it's like they get more of these people to vote during presidential elections. They don't pay attention during midterms. They just don't. They don't care. They don't follow it. It's not. And even though in many ways midterm is actually more effective than the presidential election.
You know what? At least, you know, you can laugh at my country for all its stereotypes you have thrown at you through films over the years and the little media that it gets. But at least our Prime Minister shuts those borders off. And anybody comes here illegally is sent straight back, their name placed on a register, and they can never, ever, ever get back into the country and become a citizen. They are blacklisted forever. And if you, because if you don't come through the legal channels, screw you. You're going back home. We're just we're there with a couple of bodybuilders to kick the fucking boat straight back into the water the other way. And also, anybody who came here after July 1st, who were told that they'll be processed, blah blah blah. Yeah, Abbott's rescinded the whole lot. Guess what? They're all going back home as well now.
Envious of your country. Actually, enforces laws.
He enforces the laws that are on the books.
Oh, imagine that.
You know, Abbott may look like a weasel-faced little shit, but at least he gets shit done.
Well, dude, I was telling you that when he got elected. I was saying that he enforces those immigration laws. What our leaders won't do that, you know?
Oh, and by the way, your open-armed president was in our country the other day in Brisbane at the G20 summit, and the uncouth little shit that he is had the cheek to chastise Mr. Abbott over his policies.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. At least our borders are fucking kept set shut, Mr. Barack. Yeah.
Well, remember he signed a green policy or like some sort of emissions thing with China. Like, you know, like they're going to follow that. These are the guys who claim, no, those girls aren't 14 years old on the Olympics gymnast team. They're 18. Come on.
Of course they are. They don't take steroids like that Lee Chong Chong, whatever fucking basketballer was.
I mean, they're goddamn commies. They aren't going to tell you anything true.
Of course not. Yeah.
Why about it?
So anyway.
Was it, for a lesson plan project I had at school, I had to construct a multi-day lesson plan that connected with each other. So I picked a thing out of the Texas Educational Standards about economics. And one of them was on the one I chose was on the differences between capitalism, socialism, communism, and fascism, although fascism doesn't have a set economic standard or philosophy. But to illustrate the I was looking for lesson ideas on the internet, and I found one about illustrating the differences using Hershey's Kisses and rock, paper, scissors. And it was like, you start out, you distribute the Hershey Kisses out somewhat unevenly, and the kids play rock, paper, scissors. They compete, and whenever they lose, they hand over a piece of candy, and you let them keep playing until, you know, a few people have a bunch of them, and then you come in as the government, take the candy away from the kids who won, and just redistribute it, and then they're supposed to, you're supposed to kind of discuss, like, well, how does that feel? What do you think? And when they decide to share, that's supposed to be the ideal of communism, but I thought it would be better if I took the candy away from all of the kids and ate it in front of them and insisted that they had candy. And when they've talked back, I say, I give detentions to anybody who tells me that they have candy.
That's
because you have candy.
Yeah. That candy's a metaphor for the American jobs now.
Everything.
That's an old Tim Slagle joke, actually, from a stand-up routine.
What is it really?
He does a trick-or-treat thing about economics.
Really?
Except he does it with taxation, though. It's on his...
Okay.
And they did it on Parks and Recreation, and they wonder if it plagiarized the gag. And then, but I think some people said, oh, my uncle used to tell that joke or something.
That's so funny. I mean, because I know Tim Slagle, but I don't remember that bit.
Yeah, it's one of his famous bits, was the Halloween taxation thing about taking the candy.
Well, I've always heard jokes about taking candy and stuff, but I thought it would be funny if it was like the teacher eating it in front of the students. And
yeah, that's literally how Slagle's gag went, and that's what they depicted on Parks and Rec.
So. Oh my gosh,
that was that old story.
I've never even seen that.
There's a story Garrow and I made up about that. that Gwanda's story.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. I'm not gonna repeat it. How during Live Aid. Back in 1985, instead of getting sent bags of rice to in Ethiopia. They just got sent fucking records of a Live Aid concert. It was worse than that, but I'm not going to repeat it here. No, no fucking way. It's between us. Yeah. But I can ask you, I want to ask you one thing. If during the address that Obama gave today, if you could sit with one person in the world during it, who would it have been? I'd be shocked if you don't pick who I pick. It's easy. Oh, come
Garrow?
On. No. No, Garrow would be really close second to this guy I'm thinking of.
Defend Wall Street?
No. Oh, come
Super
on.
Super Mexican.
No, there's your chances gone. John.
G. Gordon Liddy.
No, close. Oh, close.
Timothy Leary's severed head.
No. Do you want a hint? Do you want a hint?
Alright.
Yeah?
Yeah! Who is this motherfucker on the TV now?
Oh, dude, the Nuge.
The Nuge. Don't you think it would be fucking fascinating to sit with him during that address?
Hey, just pissed off my buddies in law enforcement. Yeah.
Exactly. I think watching anything newsworthy would be great with Ted.
It would, but tonight really would have been fucking great.
Is Ted saying anything right now?
I haven't checked, to be honest with you. I really haven't. I've only just thought of it.
11 hours ago. My New Jersey Blood Brothers.
he's died.
Yeah. No, he's
probably posted out. He's probably out killing deer right
he's
now.
He's out hunting. This is hunting season.
Yeah, right? It is.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd be out in the Michigan State Forest, wouldn't he, out now?
Like, yeah! 12-pointer! Yeah! Think that shit. Yeah, starting dead deer in these dozens of houses in Detroit. I just bought these motherfuckers for $1. Yeah!
I love the backstraps, baby.
Yeah.
He's probably hanging out with Joe Perry and they're shooting guns.
Joe Perry. You know what, actually...
Joe Perry's just like him. Joe Perry's like a conservative... Real conservative guy, loves guns.
Yeah, I was reading in Nuge's book about how he actually taught Steven Tyler and Joe Perry about guns, because they were actually, you know, they weren't pro-gun at all until they went out hunting with Ted, and then Joe Perry became really big into it.
I think that's
well,
all
Perry, it takes, Perry's really. Been collecting guns for years, though. Apparently yeah. He's always been interested in it, so.
Yeah, well, it must have been just Steven Tyler then, I think.
Yeah, Tyler, he was teaching.
It's Tyler's funny, kid. Though, there's a lot of liberal Hollywood types who love guns, like Spielberg and Zemeckis.
Yeah, Spielberg's got a gun collection that's said to be
cool. Has he?
Oh, yeah, Robert Zemeckis too.
Jesus. I've also heard Wes Craven, but not from the most reliable
oh,
sources.
Oh God, Wes Craven with a gun would be a frightening prospect. No, Garrow with a gun would be a frightening prospect.
although if you watch Craven's movies, there is like a love of weapons and booby traps and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, Hills Have Eyes.
Every movie
fucking...
he does has like lethal traps being set up.
Right, right, and some like notable gun is on display. Or
oh
something.
Yeah.
Actually, I know why Ted's out hunting. He's happy. You know why Ted's happy? Guess who got up in Texas?
Greg Abbott.
Yeah, Greg Abbott got up in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They couldn't use his association with Ted to keep him from getting elected.
Yeah! Think that shit. Gonna play a number one guitar lick in the world. Just lay down your guitars. Nothing else been fucking worth a shit since Stranglehold. 1975, the year I killed everyone. I killed rock. Yeah.
Number one bass lick in the world, Stranglehold.
You know, the Mentors, I was listening to the history of the Mentors as spoken by El Duce on one of their albums, and they had a guy, one of their early singers was a guy called Derek St. Homo.
I remember that.
Derek St. Homo.
Wasn't Il Duce on Jerry Springer with Guar one time?
Yeah. I've seen the episode. Yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah,
I've seen clips. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to get the rest of the Mentors on this show because I'm actually friends with them. I actually correspond with Dr. Heathen Scum on Facebook quite a bit. I wouldn't mind getting him and Sicky Wifebeater on because they're actually doing a documentary. about the Mentors at the moment, so it'd be fascinating to get them on for that. But alright, anyway, that's enough politics. I'm sure probably some of you tuned out by now.
Oh
yeah. I know John the Rogue Demon Hunter's not fond of us talking about politics, so apologies, Demon Hunter. We're just
I'm surprised we weren't talking about Bill Cosby this week.
Bill Cosby, no. Oh, we will maybe later. The show hasn't finished yet, remember. Not a great deal to talk about the film we're talking about today. But all this horrible, you know, racist talk that you're probably thinking has been generated through the show is relevant, because the film we're talking about is horribly racist. And for this episode, because he's such a big-ass fan of it, I'm going to throw it over to Hunter to run this one.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Just tossing the hot potato in my lap. The movie we're going to talk about today is a movie directed by Robert Downey Sr. Called Putney Swope. And it's from, what year is it? I forget.
1970, I believe.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I thought
69.
It was late 60s.
69, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it was his first, like, full-length feature, because he'd done a lot of shorts in the New York underground scene. Like,
yeah,
he was kind of in that scene with Andy Warhol and Paul Bartel. Like, he was actually in some of Paul Bartel's short films. And it's funny, when you see Robert Downey Sr. in those, he looks just like Robert Downey Jr., young Robert Downey Jr. in those.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And even in his own films, too, like Chafed Elbows, I think. But there's one where he plays like a time-traveling Civil War soldier. That one's pretty crazy. But I think Putney Swope was his first like kind of feature-length movie. It's like 85 minutes. And it's about a advertising firm in New York that they're having a meeting, and the head of the company dies right there at the meeting, and they hold a vote based on the corporate bylaws, and they all end up voting for the token black guy on the board, Putney Swope, because they don't think anybody else is going to vote for him.
That was funny, that bit. It was like...
and Putney Swope becomes head of the company. He fires almost everybody, eventually everybody, and turns it into an advertising firm called Truth and Soul, based on progressive radical black politics.
Did you notice, though, he kept one white guy on to reverse the now become the token white? Yeah.
Absolutely. There's the scene where there's the white guy who comes in asking for a raise, and he goes, well, if I give you a raise, everybody's going to want a raise, and you'll still make less money.
Yeah, that was a true story. Apparently, Danny was saying, I watched an interview with him with Paul Thomas Anderson, and he was saying, actually, that really happened to him in real life. Yeah, some black guy he was working with was getting less than he was.
Well, that was supposed to be a role reversal. Like,
yeah,
a white guy asking a black dude for a raise.
That's right,
and
yeah.
You see, like the white guys are the chauffeurs, and they do the menial labor in the building once Putney takes over Truth and Soul. But the story, it's kind of like George Orwell's Animal Farm, in a way, where it's about this company, this corporate company that's very much of the status quo, that gets taken over by progressive leftist politics, but it's all a big lie, and it's kind of ends up being the same thing that it was. Like Putney, he preaches this sort of progressive message, but he also people will come to him with ideas, and he'll say, that's terrible, you're fired, and then he'll use it. But he also has these like kind of feel good policies. I don't advertise cigarettes, liquor, or toy guns.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he has all these feel good policies, and
which were all the things that his company was doing before he became.
Stuff they were doing before, but at the same time, he's a total ruthless businessman when he takes over, and it's sort of about how there are these things, these ideals that people hold, but once they're put in positions of power, they totally throw them away, and that those ideas kind of really don't work. And that's something I really like about it. But it's also full of insanely politically incorrect humor.
It really is.
The president and his wife are midgets.
Do you know why he cast them? You know why he wrote them as midgets? Well, he didn't write them as midgets at all. He goes, the reason why I cast them as midgets was because they're the ones who gave the best readings. Yeah. So they became...
Sounds like something you would say.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you talk about those interviews with Paul Thomas Anderson. The Don Cheadle character in Boogie Nights is Buck Swope, who's supposed to be the son of Putney Swope.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that from Anderson's commentary. Yeah.
And Robert Downey Sr. played the head of the recording studio, who wouldn't give the recordings to Mark Wahlberg and John C. Reilly.
Yeah, that's a YP, not an MP.
Yeah. The magic on those tapes, that's ours.
Yeah.
But yeah, Stuart, you were sending me angry Facebook messages before we recorded this, so I assume you hated the movie.
Keep talking.
Okay, well, what do you think of this movie, John?
When I rented it like 15 or 16 years ago and saw it for the first time, coincidentally, because Garrow had seen it and liked it. And
of course he did.
And he saw it at like a Coolidge Corner revival, you know, like they had a screening or something. And he saw it. He told me it was really funny. Like, he didn't even know how funny it was going to be. And
I thought it's hilarious. I mean, I was laughing my ass off earlier watching
it. I rented it. I found it at a video store in Cincinnati where I was living and working at the time. And I watched it. I thought it was pretty funny back then. Watching it the other day off YouTube, I didn't like it as much, and it's something that I've talked about before on the show about comedies, when you know when a lot of the jokes are based on shock humor or kind of surprise humor. When you watch it the second time, you already know the gag and the punchline, so it just isn't as funny, although I still laughed at a few things.
There were some things that I didn't remember, like we need a pullout agreement. I agree, like too many dependents.
Right, well... The best gag was like he was caught in the hotel room with a 13-year-old. He said, well, at least he wasn't superstitious.
Yeah. And,
like, that was my favorite joke in the movie. But I thought the commercials, which are shown in color, the rest of the movie's in black and white, like all the New York underground art films of the time. I thought the commercials were hilarious when I saw it years ago. Watching it again, it's like I knew the punchline's coming. I just didn't find it as shocking. The other thing is, you know, this was like really shocking stuff in 1969. I think it hit big release in 70. And it was one of the few art films to actually get like a bigger mainstream release. But I was just like, you know, South Park gets away with more every week nowadays. Like they get away with more on primetime TV.
With South Park, but yeah, they do. I guess they do. I don't know. I haven't been...
Well, they really do. I mean, it's not live action, so it's not as shocking because it's a cartoon. But I mean, thematically, they're getting away with far worse.
The
stuff.
Thing is, though, that Putney Swope is more cutting edge than what South Park was for its time when it first started, because that sort of stuff was just not seen on television. Now, you know, South Park's sort of thing it's run its course way too long.
Well, that's all you get on TV now is that type of shock humor that's about almost like soft R level, at least, you know, R rated level in the States. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's still some funny stuff in it. It's interesting to watch. It's a time capsule, but that I didn't enjoy it as much the second time as I did the first time. I just thought it was a riot.
What I thought was interesting about it was how critical it is of the progressive politics of the time. Like, you know, most of the movies from that era that critics hold as great are very left-wing progressive movies.
Right. They're total propaganda.
This movie's very critical of that stuff.
It is. Like, it really is.
I mean, it kind of shows the hypocrisy of all that. I thought it was very, you know, I thought it was very subversive. Like, I mean, the South Park's a good comparison because South Park is a pretty libertarian TV show.
Yeah.
And holds those kind of values and kind of subverts that stuff. And a lot of people don't realize that.
No, they don't get the joke. They actually know a lot of people who are very leftist that think South Park reflects their views.
Oh, I do too. And I think that's hilarious.
Which I find it hysterical. Another thing is Arnold Johnson, who plays Putney in the film. I know that actor from Sanford and Son. Like, I've seen him on TV for years. And so seeing him with a dubbed Robert Downey voice, it's very awkward when you're watching it because the sound is on such a different audio wave than everybody else. It's like, hey, you know,
I think that adds to it. I love it. Your father was a horse's ass.
Yeah, but I know Arnold Johnson's voice. So that's the other thing. It's kind of like it's a little off-putting. You know, it's like, oh, well, you know. But one thing I did picked up on this time out is I realized this was probably a big influence on movies like The Groove Tube and Kentucky Fried Movie.
Mm, oh, totally, yeah.
The raunchy commercials, I mean, that's what Groove Tube and Kentucky Fried Movie and Loose Shoes and Primetime, all that other stuff, pretty much swiped. I mean, that's the formula right there.
Yeah. It really was. I thought those commercials were very funny. Eat the cereal. No shit!
Yeah.
I didn't think she'd get the line. Fuck off, Bob!
That had to be one of the first films with the F-bomb as well. There's a few of them in the movie.
Yeah, right. It was. I think it was definitely one of the first to get a somewhat big release.
Mm.
That got away.
Because I know that Robert Downey got signed with like MGM or other studios, and of course he'd turn in movies that they couldn't release. They were like, wait a minute, this is what we thought we were getting.
Yeah.
And I think his biggest studio film was Up the Academy, the Mad Magazine movie that Mad Magazine disowned.
Holy shit, was that his, was it?
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Like, oh, wow.
That was his big teen slob comedy of the, oh, shit!
Oh, shit!
We talked about it on the last episode. The oh, shit! Genre.
Holy crap, I know it. I got to seek that out now. I really do. All right. You wanted to hear my take on it. All right.
Stuart was messaging me going, this movie is shit. Shit!
And a Putney Swell voice. Who's going,
this movie is this movie is a horse's ass.
Well, I do want to say that this, I was fucking with a lot of these the whole time. I really enjoyed this quite a lot.
I was going to say,
yeah.
This movie is so up your alley. I was like, I cannot believe that you don't like this movie.
Because you did question me. I'm like, this movie's just shit. What is this crap? No, I was playing around the whole time. No, I really enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah. I like how you know how to play mind games with me, Stuart.
Of course, yeah. Especially like, you're so keen for me to like something because you think I'm just—it's right at my right in my wheelhouse. And I'm like, nah, I'm just gonna fuck with this guy today. I'm like, nah, this is crap.
I was like, I cannot believe why Stuart doesn't like this. I mean, he must be in a shitty mood. Like,
no. Oh, granted,
you paid an Australian ticket price to see it. Good lord.
Oh God, I like YouTube was like, pay us $30.
Oh no. Granted, I am tired today, but that probably might have heightened my like for this film. I tell you where they had me, where they completely won me over. When the Asian guy goes, I'm one happy chink. What the fuck is this movie about?
I love the way that he has the dude pitch him. He's like, I've been thinking about this concept. He's like, lay it on him. And the old white dude from the board goes, he says, Columbus comes off the Nina the Pinta and the Santa Maria. There's an Indian out there to greet him, and he clocks him in the face and lays him out. A woman comes out with a hatchet in her back, and she knows she's about to be exploited.
A cleft head.
With a cleft head. And she's got tears running down her face because the Indian knows he's about to be exploited. He puts his arm around him. He says, I'll give you this ship for 50 guineas. I'll give you this land. I want this land for 50 guineas. The Asian guy, and then we'll push your product. The Asian guy's like, I love it.
One thing I thought about when I watched, after I finished this film, was one, you couldn't remake it. Absolutely impossible to remake. Because of its time, and you couldn't do that sort of humor now. Number two, you could not as fuck show this on television. No way.
No.
And
I love the trailer for this movie is just the Zit Cream commercial, the Face Off commercial.
That was good. I some of the commercials I didn't quite get. I didn't get the fan away one. I'm like, you can't eat an air conditioner. What the hell is she talking about?
There's like people starving in the street around her while she's dancing. You can't eat an air conditioner.
Yeah, there's some of the humor is kind of lost in time because they're probably taking off on ads that were big back then.
Possibly, yeah.
And we don't get the jokes. We haven't seen those ads because they predate ours.
Well, some of the ads are actually based on Downey's time at an advertising agency.
Yeah.
So there's probably some that he's seen that were pitched but never came to fruition, and he's like, he's just completely taken him for his own film, which, yeah, but like some of the, what was that one where that black and white couple were out in the
that was the trailer for the movie, which she flashed me.
Fucking
he's like, you flashed me your beaver. But I love
The singer was in the boy in that sketch was in Hair.
Yeah, he was. That's Downey said that he was. You know, they said we got a couple. I think the girl was in Hair too.
Yeah, she was.
She may have been. Yeah, I think she was. She actually had a pretty big career after that movie.
But, you know who she is? You know who it is? Danny was saying that's Martha Plimpton's mother.
Really?
Yeah. Her name's something Plimpton, and when Anderson was talking to him about the commercial, he goes, yeah, that woman's actually Martha Plimpton's mother.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny.
Mm.
I love the musicality of it where they're like, my man uses face off. He's really out of sight, and so are his pimples.
My other favorite gag was the firecracking when they walk in on the firecracker throwing Chinese.
Oh, you
and
it's know
that's like,
so...
is it Pearl Harbor Day?
You know, Anderson pinched that for Boogie Nights.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, Paul Thomas.
Oh yeah, I think he admitted
fucking
that.
Totally. Watch that guy Boogie Nights straight away.
It's funny, the guy who played the Chinese guy in Boogie Nights in his underwear throwing the fireworks was friends with Garrow. It's Joe Chan.
Bull, no way.
Yes, Garrow knows him. And this is funny.
Garrow and Osmo are friends.
Yes, and I was talking to Ronan Rowe like about a year ago, and he said, yo, man, I was working at this agency, and there was this guy there with a script that was being read by Oliver Stone. Did you ever see Boogie Nights? He played the Chinese guy throwing firecrackers. I went, Joe Chan? He goes, yeah, that's him. It's like, God, what a small world.
Jeez.
Yeah, but apparently.
I tell you the one thing.
He's Chinese.
Yeah, the one thing that got me this film really cracking up hard was just when they're talking to the president, the midget, and his wife, and they got that bald-headed guy and the other guy telling the jokes, Mr. President, tell the shit jokes. I was on the floor laughing.
And I love the they have the photographer. It's like he's like, you can join in on us if you want for the threesome with the midget president and his wife,
yeah.
And he just jumps in and starts tickling them.
Oh, that's the one I said I did pictures for JFK, for Johnson, for Nixon, yeah. Yeah. I was at Agnew's funeral.
the face-off girl was Shelley Plimpton. She is the mother of Martha Plimpton and daughter she had with Keith Carradine.
Oh, really? Keith Carradine's her father? Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, she didn't take his name. Or at least for the stage, because it would be tied in with the Carradine family.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. It's a bit of a dynasty there, I should say.
Sorry. Autoerotic asphyxiation.
Right.
Kill Bill. Yeah. All right, what else are we going to say about this film? Irreverent is definitely one term that comes to mind when you talk about this movie. Who was that guy who pitched that idea about the watermelon? That made me laugh, obviously.
Well, what was the gag? It was like he was saying we should have watermelon breaks or something.
Watermelon breaks, that's right. Black people
was like, get rid of this guy.
Should have
but watermelon. It's so funny, like a lot of the stuff in the movie when he says get rid of them, you'll see it show their ideas show up later in the film.
Oh, totally, because wasn't one of them the face-off pimple cream?
Oh yeah, he goes, I've got ideas for three products, and one of them was face-off pimple cream.
Because I'm thinking later, okay, he used that, but he fired the guy. But yeah, he's still in the ideas.
That's the whole thing. He steals the ideas from the people he fires. You know, it's just, you know, part of that thing. And by the way, the Muslim dude has hired underneath him.
Yeah.
He made me think he was. Every time I see him, I just think Muslim Flavor Flav.
It's Antonio Fargas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just. He reminds me of Flavor Flav in this movie.
Yo, it's Huggy Bear, man. Shit. Every black man from like 74 onwards was a fucking prototype of Huggy Bear. Shit.
Pretty much.
I never saw Starsky and Hutch, so.
Oh, dude, fucking hell, mate. He was.
Or at least see across 110th Street, then you see. Can see Antonio Fargas.
Oh, okay.
And Foxy, was he in Foxy Brown or Coffee? Was he in one
he's
of those?
He's in Foxy Brown.
He played Pam Grier's brother, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he was the guy in and I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, who's
Fly Guy.
Yeah, that's. That was a big fucking love letter to Antonio Fargas. That whole scene.
I know all the movie. I've seen him.
He was the funniest in fucking. I'm gonna get you, sucker. And that was that for a Wayans Brothers film. I'm saying that was a funny ass movie. But
that the Wayans Brothers exhausted their comedy sauce with that movie.
They really did. Yeah.
They put every great idea they had into that movie. And
I don't know. Don't be a menace to South Central.
That one was funny.
Yeah.
Is actually funnier, I think, in many ways.
I don't know about that, but it's
no, yeah.
I love "I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker," but I laugh so hard at "Don't Be a Menace" that I like my face hurt. Like if there was so much. Like even now, they couldn't make it today. It'd be burned out of the theaters. really, there's jokes in there you can't do today. I remember white critics like Gene Siskel really getting offended at it.
Yeah, but see,
or maybe it was Roger Ebert. I can't remember who, but man, they were. I don't know if Siskel was dead by then, but
hey, John, Siskel, the film was so offensive it made Roger Ebert's jaw drop, right?
Oh yeah. It's probably the one that did it.
It's like, damn, man, what happened to Ebert? In fact, he watched Don't Be a Menace, and all of a sudden he's looking like he can fit six cocks in there. What the fuck's going on?
that's when he started losing weight, I think.
Oh, right. He married that big-tittied sister as well, didn't he? The black girl, yeah. It's like, damn, man, I can fit both your boobs in here right now.
God.
Well, it supplemented his terrible writing, which everybody acts like is so great.
Oh, yeah.
Because I saw him on TV, so he must be a good writer.
He dumbed down film criticism.
His stuff reads like a 10th grader doing a film zine. It does.
Yeah.
It's like, I can criticize his writing. He's a fucking terrible writer.
No, he's... I mean, people have this affection for him because they grew up watching him on TV, and that's about it, you know.
Yeah,
and many of them ended up built like him.
They what?
Ended up built like him. Roger Ebert justified sitting around and eating and never losing the weight.
Oh God,
huge!
One of the most irritating things was when he said to Vincent Gallo, "I will one day be thin, but you will still have made the Brown Bunny."
Yeah, and then he went back and re-reviewed the Brown Bunny and gave it like 3 stars.
Yeah,
but of course nobody read that review.
No.
Him acting like an ass at the film festival.
I've never seen The Brown Bunny. What's so bad about it?
It's not bad. It's not great.
I like it, but if...
Well, why is it so disliked, then, I say?
Gallo has a way of pissing off people who write about film, and it's strange because his audience is in Japan. His movie was pretty much Japanese-financed.
I mean, the audio commentary is only available on the Japanese release.
Right. It's like, well, lawyers wouldn't clear it for the American release, because I guess he...
Well, and he slags off a lot of people on it.
Yeah, he always does.
I think it made the Australian one.
Really?
I think so. I'll delve into it while you guys are still talking.
Right. It's like we were going to get... Kirsten Dunst was going to do this scene, but she was a jerk.
Yeah.
And we
ate, it would be like she ate too much pizza pie before we... doing the take.
And he goes, but we found this girl and she was really good. I was much happier to have her than Spider Girl. I love Vincent Gallo.
Yeah, if it's on the Australian version, I'd probably have to order that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
Brown Bunny actually is a really... It's an emotional gut punch.
Yeah.
It's just it demands a lot of patience from you to get to that point. You know what I'm saying? Like, the movie's really, it's really slow, but when you get to that point, it's like, holy shit.
I've heard about the whole fucking blowjob bit. I mean,
The blowjob bit, like, yeah, it's an unsimulated blowjob, but, you know, it's not there to turn you on. It's really sad when you see it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's not like you're not sitting there going, oh damn, like look, there's a chick blowing a dude. It's really like depressing when you see it. Like I was really upset by that scene.
It's not visually upsetting like Serbian film or something like that, right?
No. Okay. Nothing like it's emotionally like it hits you in your heart. Like, okay. in a way that's really rare in movies, and that's why I think The Brown Bunny is a great film. But it's just a movie that demands patience to get to that point. Like, you have to sit through it, and there's a lot of like Vincent Gallo alone on a motorcycle, and it's a movie about loneliness.
Right.
Yes.
He's someone said that they compared him to photographer Richard Kearns' short films. Does that sound right? If anybody's familiar with him?
I'm not familiar.
I rented those years ago.
Yeah. Not in the same sort of ballpark? Because I saw some of Richard Kearns' stuff like at a fucking on those alternate gigs up playing on the big screens. I'm like, who cares? This is not really doing much for me. But it did remind me, like, one I saw was a lot of the stuff just out in the open road and him just, you know, screwing some bird up against a fucking car and, you know, things like that. That's what I'm getting at, you know? Is sort of long. Yeah. I don't know.
Visual inspiration, but Gallo makes movies that actually do have a plot in a beginning, a middle, and an end.
They have a plot and a theme, and they engage you on multiple levels, I think. You know, But, you know, Buffalo 66, I think, is insanely entertaining. Like, yeah. I think that movie is hilarious. I love watching it. Vincent Gallo's performance is just so fiery and explosive in it.
Oh, that's the one with Joaquin Phoenix.
Ricci.
I think Joaquin Phoenix, all right?
I don't remember him being in
it. No, he's not in the movie. Ben Gazzara's in the movie. And
Angelica Houston.
What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of Buffalo Soldiers, another movie altogether with Joaquin Phoenix. Don't worry.
Right, it's a different movie.
Right.
The thing is, he tends to badmouth filmmakers like Martin Scorsese. Like, he's a terrible director. And then everybody takes his views so seriously that they're like, oh, Vincent Gallo's a horrible person. And
well,
really,
it's like that thing Bret Easton Ellis talks about, like, oh, you're a hater, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're a hater. People aren't allowed to have opinions on things.
Exactly.
All right, let's get back to it. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, since you two had seen it, but I had never seen it, and looks like the commentary doesn't come with the Australian one, and you can't buy it anymore anyway, but I'm sure it'll turn up in like one of the second-hand stores there, or one of the, you know, two VA stores left in the country, which will be killed off once Netflix gets here in March next year for the Australian public.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. All right, get back to Putney Swope. What else? What caught your eye with this film, Hannah, when you first saw it? And how far back was it when you first saw it?
My roommate in Memphis, Chris. You remember he
What's
was
up,
a big
Chris.
Chris. Yeah. He was a big fan of this movie, and I think he discovered it because of the Paul Thomas Anderson connection, because he was a big PTA fan, and he was a big fan of Robert Downey Sr. And so when the Criterion's Eclipse label released the Robert Downey Sr. set, it had all of like Downey's New York underground movies on there, plus Putney Swope. Like, it had Chafed Elbows and Babo 73 and 2 Tons of Turquoise to Taos Tonight, which starred Robert Downey Jr.'s mother. When that came out, he was like, oh, dude, like, you know, that's the jam. So I just kind of blind bought it, and we watched those movies and just had a ball with them, you know?
You were sucking in by the big Criterion Collection label.
Well, not really. Well, the Eclipse label, is that's where they put out a lot of obscure stuff, you know, and kind of budget sets and...
That's the Shochaku Goes Horror set, right?
Yeah, I've got that one. Yeah, the horror comes to Shochaku, or whatever it's called, and you know, they've got some of the Rossellini sets. I've got a few of them, but I got that one because I'd always wanted to see Putney Swope, and it was a pretty cheap set. I think it was like $20, $25 or something.
Right.
So I picked it up, and Chris assured me that it was great, and I trusted his judgment, and we watched those movies and just had a ball with them. You know, some of the movies on that set are a little too avant-garde for my taste, like 2 Tons of Turquoise to Taos Tonight, and Babo 73 is kind of nonsensical, but, you know,
yeah.
Some of those movies are just fucking nuts, like, crazy way. But Putney Swope was the standout of the bunch that I just, like, we watched a bunch and, you know, would quote a lot and stuff. It's fun.
Mm. The one I heard that was one of the good ones on there as well was Chafed Elbows.
Chafed Elbows. Chafed Elbows, that's right. That one's really good. Yeah.
Okay. So now, where can people find this film?
Well, you could get it on the Criterion Eclipse set,
mm-hmm.
Which is called Up All Night with Robert Downey Sr. Robert Downey Sr. And I think a lot of that Criterion Eclipse stuff is available on Hulu. I don't know about all of it, because I think they kind of revolve the door, like some of it comes and goes, but I'd look for it on Hulu too if you have Hulu. But obviously uploaded onto YouTube as well.
Yeah, yeah, somebody out there was good enough to upload the whole film in really good quality. I think it was taken directly off the Criterion, well, the Eclipse DVD set, because it looked great. Image did release this on DVD, I think back in 2001.
Yeah, there was an old DVD release of it. It has that great poster with, like, the person flipping the bird and the girl's body is the middle finger.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But apparently the Image picture wasn't that good. It was kind of grainy. So you want to go for the Criterion or the Eclipse one.
Mm-hmm.
Or look for it on YouTube. Just type in Putney Swipe. It'll come up easily as a full movie. Now, no Blu-ray, right, at the moment?
No. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, it's a black and white movie. I mean, the Eclipse release looks great, you know?
Well, it's not necessary yet. We get black and white films like The Seventh Seal.
True, but it's funny.
Those,
like,
you know, Slopes with Sticks movies by, what's his name? Kurosawa, whatever, yeah. That
Kurosawa,
guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even in the case of those, I don't always recommend the Blu-rays. For, like, the black and white stuff, like, the grain on Blu-ray shows up a lot worse in
it
HD.
It does.
I reckon
a point of distraction, I find.
If they digital noise the shit out of it, then yeah, obviously. But if they don't, it can come up fucking spanking nice. You know, it all depends. I mean, hell, I got Psycho on Blu-ray and it looks fucking insane. I honestly noticed stuff I've never seen before on through that Blu-ray. And I'd seen it from a ton of times beforehand.
Always check with the nerds at Blu-ray.com, I have to say. Because they really know their shit, you know?
Oh, that is the fucking Bible.
If I'm sent the Bruce Lee set from that listing they had.
Yes, Mr. Cynical. Yeah, I keep going.
I hope I don't end up with some French set.
Seriously, dude, like, I've been on Blu-ray.com yesterday. People have gone for the same effing link and have gotten the fucking box set. So shut up!
I'm waiting. Not by the next episode.
I tell you what. If you get that goddamn Bruce Lee box set, you put it up on social media and say, "Yes, Stuart was right." In those fucking words. Yes, Stuart, you were right. Not like, "Oh, I've got the Bruce Lee box set. No, I'm going to go watch it now."
No, I'll make it very passive aggressive.
Yeah. Well, I guess Stuart was right for once.
Yeah, Stuart was right for once in his miserable life. And he didn't have to rent a midget to be correct about this.
Carry on.
Stuart was right. There, I'm going to send him a copy of Flipper with Paul Hogan and Elijah Wood.
Ah!
Seen it? Uh-huh. I've seen it. Big deal. I only rented it because I wanted to see
Paul Hogan.
If Paul Hogan drowned in the movie or not. But he didn't, so it was fucking a waste of money. Oh, he rides a dead whale. That would have been interesting, at least. Yeah.
Poor Hogs.
Poor Hogs, tax evading cunt that he is. Fuck him.
Him and Al Sharpton are in an elite club.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's give ratings around for Putney Swoop. All right, Mr. Cynical Bruce Lee box that ain't going to get on to get some French shit stuff instead, John.
I give it like maybe about a 6.
That's high for you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I think it's something that people should see at least once.
Oh, okay. Yeah, true.
It's a good idea of what the possibilities of the New York Underground at the time. It's pretty interesting.
Hana?
I give it an 8.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it kind of slows down at the end for me, but I was still, like, laughing. And, you know, I don't watch it that often, but I was... I was still amused by it.
Yeah.
The fourth or fifth viewing this was.
Yeah. I totally get it. It's not the sort of thing you'd watch you watch it every few years at the most.
Yeah, exactly. I watch it every
year. It's not the sort of thing, it's not like, Kiss Meets the Family of the Park for me, where I can watch it like 4 or 5 times a year, you know?
No, it's no Kentucky Fried Movie.
That's true. I mean,
it's funny every time John puts that movie on, a little piece of him dies when he sees directed by John Landis on the screen.
But you know, Kentucky Fried Movie feels more like a Zucker Abrams Zucker movie than a Landis.
Yeah, it totally is. Mm-hmm. Landis was never that funny again.
2 severed Vietnamese heads can attest to that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right, myself, I'm going to give this probably about a 6 as well. Yeah, about a 6. I enjoyed it. I think this is the sort of film for myself where I would have to watch it again to get more of the stuff, because I was a bit, bit rattled when I first saw it. I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on. Like, when they flew that guy in at the very start in the helicopter, and he
just gives that biker out
there. Yeah, and he just gives that little speech, and he's deemed as a genius, but he makes no freaking sense whatsoever.
That cost us $20,000.
28 grand for that, yeah.
28 grand, yeah. Got up light.
Yeah. I mean, this is really, really dark satire, without a doubt. But, yeah, definitely worth a watch, I'd say. One thing I noticed as well lately, like ever since Robert Downey Jr. started getting really big, he's now become known as Robert Downey Sr. He was never known as that before. It was always just Robert Downey.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Because now even when they put his films out, it's Robert Downey Sr., but...
I guess it's to distinguish between the two.
Oh, totally, yeah, yeah. Because everyone might think, oh, man, I remember this Robert Downey Jr. movie. He ain't got his fucking... He's not in it, man. No, I mean...
He has to.
Well, actually, he's credited as Robert Downey, a prince.
Yes. Did you know how he got called a prince, or why he says that?
I do not know why.
No, apparently, Anderson asked him, he said that, why do you call yourself a prince? He goes, because, not good enough to be a king, and I'm too something else to be a queen, so I'm stuck in the middle. I'm just a prince. LSD would have brought that one on, I reckon.
But, well, nobody would have guessed that his son would end up being, like, probably the third or fourth most popular actor right now.
Oh, no.
Is he only third or fourth? I thought he was...
I think
he's number one.
He'd have to be.
Could be. If you had the Marvel movies and Sherlock Holmes and combined the popularity in recent years, you could say he's the most popular actor now.
If you had told me 10 years ago, that Robert Downey Jr. would be the biggest actor in the world today, I would have fucking laughed at you.
Oh, totally, yeah.
You know?
I would have as well.
I mean...
No one would have picked it. I mean, he was a wreck. He was
the butt of jokes. Like on Family Guy, I've got enough tranquilizers here to bring down Robert Downey Jr., you know?
He was a joke, and I wouldn't say that the movies he did back then, like Air America or anything, that you'd remember.
I enjoyed Air America.
What about Back to School, huh?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, you know.
The pickup artist.
Yeah.
Although, I fucking love him in Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, because he was the Australian reporter, wasn't he, mate?
Yeah. Gale.
That's twice he's played in Australia now, do you know that?
Oh, but when Tom Sizemore was on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, he had all those stories about working on Natural Born Killers with coked out Robert Downey Jr. And he said Downey would have been up all night doing coke, and he would come on the set, hadn't even read the script, and he would be like, Tom, run lines with me. And, Tom Sizemore would just, read off lines to him, and Downey would just be like, okay. And then he would just do it.
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah. And, him and Brett both, reminisced about about Robert Downey Jr. stories from back in the day. So it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I'll have to listen to it. I quit listening to Sizemore when he kind of backpedaled on his Bill Clinton stories.
Oh, yeah. He totally did backpedal.
Which he was laughing at so hard when he was telling them, they were true.
Oh, they had to be true.
And this motherfucker says to me, I'm the fucking president. Don't you talk to me like that, you asshole.
I'm going to get Elizabeth Hurley over here and I'm going to
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what?
Oh, God.
But, no, definitely check out that episode of the Bret Easton Ellis podcast because it's so funny. Like, just the stories they tell. It was great.
Mm. I've never heard it.
And also, Tom tells stories about Bret.
Because he probably worked with him on Lesson Zero.
Yeah, and, Tom would go, talked about when Bret Easton Ellis stole his cocaine. He goes, Bret Easton Ellis is like, I have no memory of that. And he goes, no, my cocaine would be gone. I'd be like, Bret, you took my cocaine. And you would say, no, I didn't.
Oh my goodness.
You're in the bathroom, and there's nobody else who could have taken my cocaine, and you did. And he was like, and you were like, nope. Wasn't me, Tom. You're crazy. He also, it's a really great podcast because Brady Stills is like, I have no memory of that.
Oh, my goodness. I've never heard that podcast. I don't listen to celebrity podcasts at all. I don't care how good they are. I don't listen to them on principle.
Oh, you got to listen to Ellis's. It's got some. There's some gems.
What did I just say? I don't listen to them. So why am I going to take your advice? I don't listen
because
to
you
them.
Should. You fucking Kiwi motherfucker.
Fuck off and die, cunt.
Because I'm right. It's great.
Oh, yes, you're the one. Yeah, you and Bozo Head in Denver told me about, what's that? Who's that? Skinny Pom?
Skinny Pom. Skinny Pom. Is that Tom Jennings?
No, not him. Hey, Tom, if you... Tom... No,
I love you, Tom.
But Berkshire, what's his name?
Berkshire. Skinny
Derbyshire.
Derbyshire.
He's gotten a pay per listen now, so it's like, oh, done with him.
Yeah, I haven't been listening lately because it's.
He's roped you all in, has he? Oh, you get to listen for free now. I'm going to start charging you all.
Well, I don't pay for that stuff. So
it's is like, it really pay per listen? Because it just hadn't shown up on iTunes, and so I'm like, well, if it's not on iTunes, you know.
I think it hit like a pay thing on the website.
Because
I noticed on the comments they were making fun of it.
Not doing. Nope.
All the Nazis on that site were like making fun of it. It's like making fun of the paywall model. And then they complained about Israel like they usually do.
Oh, of course.
And then they were like, Ron Paul!
And they're all just Tacky Thea or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Different name.
Derbyshire. God almighty.
I mean, I still read his column. It's great. You know. Just had a great piece on what's his name? Eisenhower today.
Yeah, I actually want to read that book. I put it.
Yeah, me too. I put it on my wish list.
Eisenhower is one of those presidents I've never really read much on. And all I ever hear is I like Ike.
I give up.
All I ever hear is I like Ike and the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, that's all you hear in lefties.
And you guys piss on me for listening to KISS podcast. Seriously, man. Shit you listen to.
Well, you know, how many times can you hear that Ace was subbed by Rick Derringer? You know? Yeah. How many times can you hear that the disco song was done with a total honest intent and was actually a big seller? How many times can you hear that Bill Aucoin was after young boys' colons?
He really was, yeah.
Yeah, Bill
crack
Aucoin,
addict.
Yeah, total. Paul Stanley had some interesting stories about him in his book.
Yeah, yes. It was like, he was a pedophile! And then you were crying at his funeral?
Exactly, yeah.
It's like, why don't you do something about it? Why don't you fire him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, they did fire him, didn't they?
I think years later. It wasn't over that stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No. They just severed ties with him in like 80s.
We just looked the other way!
I'm the star child, baby!
I turned the other cheek while Bill turned that boy's other cheek! Yeah!
Yeah,
it sounded like Dr. Rock. So instead of Paul Stanley there.
Yeah, cocaine.
Well, they confirmed that their number one fan was apparently some young 13-year-old homosexual that Bill Aucoin like took advantage of.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah. It was stomach-turning stuff in that book.
Mm.
But then he's, like, crying at his funeral. I'm like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's wrap it up. Let's see if anybody else got anything to say. Anybody want to talk about Bill Cosby?
No. You know what? I want to see how that story plays out for another week or so.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be honest. A lot of these stories coming up are they're kind of getting into crazy land.
They really are.
Not that I want to say, I don't believe these women, but there's something really odd about these stories. So
and we were talking about it earlier, like you were saying, like it's like these women are like, oh, I went and Bill Cosby invited me over, and then I woke up and I felt weird. He drugged me, and then I sucked his dick, and then and then
two stories are like that already,
and then. I went home, and then my parents said maybe I should hang out with him. So yeah. I did, and he flew me out, and I sucked his dick again, but I think he drugged me.
it just sounds like regret sex or something.
I mean, but here's the thing. The stories are very similar, which kind of makes me uncomfortable. But what I find really odd about it, is people's reactions online. I don't think they're really outraged that Bill Cosby may have done this stuff. I think they're mad at him for what he said at the NAACP. All sounds like Schadenfreude and just like...
Yeah, they're jeering along.
Like, they're just like, oh, like, now we have something that we can, like, pin on him, you know?
Right,
It just seems like this... It's just... The vibe I'm getting from people is this really, like... With every internet lynch mob, it just feels like this ugly mob mentality that just makes me feel gross.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look in his past, it's like it's been headlines before that he's pretty much been extorted by mistresses. That's not, it's nothing
new. I mean, it sounds like Bill Cosby, like a lot of celebrities, is a pussy hound and he shoots, you know?
Right. He's kind of paying the price for it. Or is people looking back at their experience in the 70s and then suddenly seeing it with a different view, you know?
Mm hmm.
I mean, this is a guy who, you know, is hanging out at the Playboy Mansion all the time. Nobody's shocked that he cheated on Camille.
I mean, and I do think Bill Cosby probably doth protest too much with his family value shit.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And his sweaters, good Lord.
I mean, like, he presents this wholesome image, but he's obviously, like a lot of comedians, has his problems, has his demons, has his issues. But I don't know, like... the thing is, on the internet, everybody's guilty until proven innocent.
Right.
And I want to give Cosby the benefit of a doubt, especially because, you know, I grew up loving him, you know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of us did, you know. I love I Spy. I love his first sitcom, The Bill Cosby Show, is brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Not The Cosby Show.
Family, right.
80s, which was...
But when dramatic. When I was a kid, it was great. Like,
oh yeah, everybody watched that when they were young. But it's like he has done some really good stuff. But whatever's going on here, it's interesting to see how people are quick to jump on him. Like,
well,
oh.
And it's kind of crazy how it started. Like again with Hannibal Buress,
yeah,
calling him a rapist at a thing, and the little video went viral.
Also the meme contest that Cosby did on his own site, I think, is what blew it up.
Some
of them were pretty funny. So
it's like, it's absolutely. Let's remember the cake times, not the rape times.
I was
going
to make you a sandwich, but you passed out because I drugged you.
I was at the gym and they had those on CNN up on the screen, and I was taking a drink of water and I saw like, let's remember the cake times, not the rape times, and I spread in the middle of the gym. I was taking a sip of water, and I just sprayed water all over the place. Like, the gym in front of everybody, there's this big water spray all over the ground in the mirror.
I mean, there were some funny memes, but I think the way this is being played out is just looking... It's starting to look weird. It's going to be
interesting. Well, and it's just internet mobs make me feel gross. Like they all gross me out. They make me, because I see a bunch of people who act like they're being noble and great, but they're really just being ugly and gross. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
The internet mobs who
it just there's just something about it that brings up this ugliness, like, you know, and I don't want to call these women liars or anything, you know, because who knows, maybe it's true, but I find people's reactions to it, they're just gleeful.
My issue is it's the same people who were like, how dare Rush Limbaugh call Sandra Fluke a slut?
I know, right?
It's the exact same people.
And exactly. It's just people who like to get online and scream about other things and just show how great they are. But I know these people, and they're just as misogynistic as, you know.
Oh yeah.
As the beer swigging guy down the street, you know.
Like, yeah. That's like when I once pointed out, I said that I don't know where everybody gets off about this PC sensitivity, because Democrats told some of the best AIDS jokes back in the 80s.
I mean, dude.
That's some vicious stuff.
Oh, you watch some of those comedies from like the late 70s and 80s written by a lot of prominent Hollywood leftists. Like,
oh, yeah.
Really, like, stuff you could not do today.
Nah, not at all.
I said pick up
National Lampoon from the 1980s.
Oh, my God.
Jeez, I can still quote some of those jokes. Wait. It's like Dracula putting condoms on his fangs. I'm in the safe sucks now.
Oh, God.
It's my all-time favorite. Or they had the lifeguard couldn't get everybody out of the pool for the break, so he sends in the AIDS victim to dive in.
Oh, my God.
And it's like this emaciated cartoon strip.
What the fuck?
Oh yeah. You pick up those old. You go to a comic book store where they might have some old National Lampoons from the 80s for sale if you can find them, or find them on eBay. You'll be stunned by the type of humor that's on there, and that was all written by Harvard liberals. Yeah. They can hide their past. They like to pretend they didn't make those jokes.
Some of them are probably written by Conan O'Brien, you know?
Probably so. Yeah. I know one of them was a guy who later worked on Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh my God!
I love how people try to act like they were always like these politically correct types of bullshit.
Oh, but I learned from my ways.
Yeah, it's like, no, I was actually reading the stuff back then. Thank you.
Yeah, which turned you into the man you are today, right?
Yeah, pretty evil guy. So.
Yeah, the cynical John. All right, yeah. let's say goodnight and wrap this up. And yeah,
alrighty.
And in the immortal words of Penn and Teller. America, build a 50-foot border wall, and there'll be a Mexican there with a 51-foot ladder. Oh,
<God. laughs>
It's true, you know. And I just heard there's a cancellation of the TV show Border Patrol, because it don't exist no more.
Didn't Steven Seagal say he would enforce our borders? I can't remember.
He's our only hope.
What's a fat man with a fucking...
All 800 pounds of him.
My God.
What's a fat man with widow's peak going to do? He's too busy exporting Japanese women somewhere or another.
He was another guy who had the, he raped me and enslaved me thing, and then she went back like 3 days later.
Yeah, that's true. That she said he had a sex slave dungeon or something.
But she kept going back.
I'm like, okay, like, obviously, if you keep going back, either it was not a thing, or you have some serious issues that need to be worked out that happened well before this guy. No.
Yeah. Maybe she was really into those gore novels.
Oh, yeah.
Planet Gore, the slavery.
Yes. All right, enough. All right.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up. Say goodnight, fellas.
Adios.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com, type in Midnight Movie Cowboys, hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.